Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Sox. Members FDIC.
You are listening to the White Sox Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank. I'm Chuck Arfine, and today on the podcast, it is a conversation with White Sox GM Rick Hahn. We get into a whole lot of stuff in this conversation. We talk about the long-term contract signed by Eloy Jimenez. How long has this been in the works? Did the contract talks affect his play this spring? I asked Rick Hahn about those topics and more on Jimenez. And then we do get into what happened this offseason, specifically with Manny Machado. First off, why did it take so long for Machado to sign? I mean, this thing took forever. It got all the way into spring training. Was it because of Machado? Was it because of the teams like the White Sox and the Padres and the offers and the discussions that were going on? So I wanted to find out why we, talking about the media and fans, had to go through this thing for so long until it finally got to spring training, and clearly the result is not and was not what many White Sox fans were hoping for. I also asked Rick, why wouldn't the White Sox guarantee him the last 2 years of the contract offer like the Padres did? That seems to have been the difference between him being a Padre and a member of the White Sox. And what would Hahn say to the skeptical White Sox fans out there who don't believe they'll ever convert on a premium free agent? So that and more on Machado and the off-season moves that did happen and didn't happen are coming up. And we also talk about a deal the White Sox were on the verge of making, but it was railroaded by, of all things, a tweet. Rick wouldn't say what deal this was. I'm guessing it was for Jock Peterson. Needless to say, Rick, not happy about this. I cannot blame him. I'd be furious. So we get into that, as well as if the worst part of the White Sox rebuild is behind them. So that and much more coming up. A conversation with Rick Hahn on the White Sox Talk Podcast. Let's do it.
White Sox, White Sox, go, go, White Sox.
That ball hit deep, way back.
Carlton Fisk has put the White Sox ahead.
Jimenez leaves the ballpark. You can't put it on the board. Yes!
We got a chance to do something real special.
All right, sit back, relax, and strap it down. It's time for the White Sox Talk Podcast.
I want to first start with Eloy Jimenez. I want to go back to your trip to the Dominican Republic. Why you felt this was something I needed to do, I wanted to do in the offseason?
Well, frankly, these conversations have been going on for a long time, going back to last season. And I felt it was important, and it wasn't just me. It was after conversations with Marco Patti, who's plugged into the community down there better than I am. The two of us felt it made sense to go down there, sit down with the family, have them get to know us a little bit better. Keep in mind, usually when a young Dominican player is signed, it's at age 16. They've got history with the scout. There's a comfort level with the family. And it's a relationship that is nurtured up through the minor league. So by the time a player's 21, like Eloy was last year, the family has known the organization for 5+ years probably. In this situation where we acquired the player midway through his minor league career, there wasn't that history and that comfort level. Obviously, we also had signed his younger brother, so I wanted to be there to welcome him and put a name with the face for them, or face with the name, and sort of build on the relationship we had going. Marco and I thought it was important for them to understand what we were about as an organization, to hear directly from me about it, and increase their comfort level. We didn't talk at that dinner, we didn't talk during any of my time there about a contract, about call-ups, about really anything other than baseball and the organization.
When did those conversations begin about a contract?
They've been going on for a while. And in fact, in all candor, I thought we were going to get this deal done at the GM meetings. So that's how far back this goes. They hit a wall during that, you know, revisited it slightly at the winter meetings. And then obviously over the last couple of weeks, was able to sort of pull things together.
How important was it for you in your mind to have him not only be with you long term, but be able to, you know, be a part of this as much as possible in 2019?
Well, keep in mind, this is all part of our long term vision. It's all part of the long term plan. When we first went to Jerry Reinsdorf with a plan for how this entire rebuild would unfold, part of the chapter was on economics. And that portion talked about being aggressive with young players who we identified early as being part of our long-term core. Obviously didn't mention Eloy Jimenez by name at that point since he was still a Cub. But he knew that eventually that was going to be part of the plan. That was going to be another step. Last year at this time, when we sat down with Jerry again and provided him with sort of an update state of the nation about where things sat, Eloy's name was mentioned as someone that we could conceivably go to prior to him having a day of service to try to lock him up and get him in place for the long term. He's not going to be the only one, in my opinion. Obviously, we have a pretty good track record going all the way back to probably Burley in terms of doing pre-arb extensions with young players that we've identified as being important. And Eloy is only the latest in that chain, and for me at least, I hope not the last.
He struggled in spring training. It's weird to try to conclude anything here, but was this maybe hanging over him a little bit?
I am fairly confident it was hanging over him. One story, rewinding a little bit, that I don't know if has ever really been made public or you guys are aware of, but I'll share it this time, is when we agreed to the Jose Quintana extension, we actually agreed to it prior to a start at Salt River Field, like within an hour before the start at Salt River Field. He was very excited. We sent him out there, and I believe he recorded zero outs in that inning and gave up 8 runs. And if I'm not mistaken, we were supposed to announce the deal at that game. So afterwards went down and grabbed Q, explained, you know what, we're going to send you back out there in 5 days. We're going to keep this thing quiet. Obviously, you got a lot of emotions, a lot going on, and let's wait for a little bit better one before we announce it. Nothing's wrong with the deal. So we had to wait 5 days. He went back out there, and he's a little more his normal self the next start. We announced the extension. So it's easy to think these guys are robots. These guys are just names on a stat sheet. These are human beings dealing with life-changing decisions, and it doesn't surprise us at all when it affects them between the lines. You try to minimize that. It's main part of the reason we don't do stuff like this in season. Ideally, you do it in the off season, if not in spring training, because it does have a real effect.
What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like when he plays his first home game?
You know, we saw some of it when Moncada made his debut a couple years ago. We saw some of it more when Kopech made his last year. And Eloy, I think, is the next one. Next logical step in that progression of excitement for White Sox fans as they start seeing some of the fruits of this labor. Once again, he's not going to be the last one. There's going to be other nights, I think, over the course of the 2019 season and very certainly over the course of the 2020 season, where more and more of these young core pieces are going to come and make their debut, and hopefully we're able to match some of the early excitement we had both with Michael and Johan's debut.
How much was Ricky excited to know that he can put him in the lineup card?
Ricky, I think when I informed him the other night it was getting close, I think his first reaction was, he said something to the effect of, don't toy with me, boss, don't toy with me. But he obviously has been waiting, whether it was going to be on opening day or it was going to be some point during the course of the 29 season. He had already spent a fair amount of time playing with different lineups with that name in it. And again, keep in mind, and I think it's important, and you've heard me say this before, this isn't about one guy. This has never have been about one guy. I love the fact that you're referencing the debuts of Moncada and the debuts of Kopech, and obviously there's others to come behind Eloy. And he's a 22-year-old making his major league debut with obviously very extraordinarily talented and very high expectations as a result. But there's going to be struggles. And Ted Williams, you know, had bad 30 at bat streaks, and inevitably Eloy Jimenez is probably going to have one as well. So initially he's probably going to hit a little farther down in the order, in Ricky's order, trying to ease him into this process. We already saw a little bit here while he was in big league camp how other teams are going to try to get him out. He's going to have to learn to make adjustments to what they're trying to do to him. Given his baseball IQ and his ability, I suspect those struggles will be somewhat limited, and you're going to see flashes, if not a lot of consistent elements of that potential being reached. But again, it's important to have the expectations for this kid to be realistic.
Yeah. When the deal was completed, what was his reaction? I don't know what the dynamic was. Were you there when it happened?
I wasn't there with him when ultimately things came together. In fact, things came together by phone into the night while I think we were playing at Cincinnati was when things sort of came together. I had had some conversations with him face-to-face in the days leading up. The thing that I think meant the most to him throughout this, going back to last year in this process, was the fact that we were willing to do something unprecedented, that we were willing to be aggressive with him, that we were essentially backing up our words with action. I think that was the most meaningful to him. Obviously, the economics are life-changing, but whether it was X amount of dollars or X plus one or X minus one, I don't think that was, in the end, Eloy's focus. He wanted to get to a certain level. Ultimately, we were able to come to an agreement at the level we did. But for him, it was more about, I'm excited to be a White Sox for the long term. And he repeatedly made it clear, going back to last year, he wants to be here for his entire career. And you know, that's going to come across when White Sox fans get to know him a little bit better, too, I think.
I want to go back a little bit to the offseason. How do you see the offseason, how it developed for you guys from your vantage point? Yeah, I'm going there.
Yeah, look, it's I don't want to relitigate the offseason. For me, it tends to be binary. You've heard these things before. We either get something done or we don't. Obviously, we did not hit on a couple of our targets, so it's hard for me to look back at the offseason and declare it a success. Because I see the specific failures in terms of our ability to convert on certain targets. Very pleased with the improvements to the bullpen. Very pleased with the presence that Yonder Alonso and John Jay have already brought to that clubhouse. Think James McCann is going to be very helpful for our young pitchers and leave an imprint going forward on this young staff. So there were a lot of positives to this offseason. For me, though, again, it's binary. Yeah. So I'm not going to sit here and talk about the resounding successes, because you either get everything done you want to or you don't. It's like at the end of the year press conferences that you guys make me do with you. Inevitably, somebody asked me to grade yourself on the course of the year. And if we aren't winning the World Series, it's a fail. It's a pass-fail situation. It's very binary for me. Now, that may be a little too unrealistic, especially when you're in the midst of a rebuild. There's certain milestones that we want to hit. There's certain progress markers that we've made that, as an organization, we should be really pleased with. But when you ask how I personally view things, it's either you do it or you don't.
Without knowing what was going on behind the scenes, I was just curious why it took so long for him to sign, or for you guys to make the offer at the end. Like, what was going on there?
You can't control the pace of these things. Even if, theoretically, you were to hear from an agent, player wants X. Even if you were to say, okay, we'll do X, that doesn't necessarily lead to a deal immediately. So, you know, why did it take so long? Expectations early in the offseason were higher than the market, I think, for a lot of guys, singling out any individual. So it kept taking a while for those things to start converging, expectations and the market. you can't really control the pace of these things. Again, even if you hit the expectation, the agent still has an obligation to make sure they're vetting out the full market, to making sure they're getting everything that their client needs, and that takes time. So you know from experience, you know from tenor, you know from your history of relationships with certain guys, when guys are getting the deal point, and you know which guys maybe you can move a little more quickly to deal point, and which guys you can't. And on premium guys, if you were to say, all right, I'm making you this, I'm giving you an exploding offer, if you say no, you're losing us forever, isn't necessarily effective on certain guys. And that's just something you tend to learn over the course of dealing with certain agents and certain types of players. Again, I'm not going to spend too much time relitigating our process or looking for fault in it or what could have been done differently. That's for internal debate and internal alterations. For me, again, it's binary. You either get it done and you didn't, and if you didn't, you figure out a better way to do it next time.
Do you mind if I ask this question?
Yes, I do.
Do you mind? I feel like I have to ask this question.
Of course, ask whatever's on your mind.
Okay. Why were the last 2 years of the deal a deal breaker in the end?
I'm not looking to relitigate all this. In the end, every player, you have to make an assessment about risk and reward. And I'm not going to get too far behind the curtain in terms of why on certain players you say I'm willing to do X years and other players I'm willing to do 2X years. But you have to look at everything in its entirety and understand the risk going forward. And you have to understand where you're at in your competitive cycle as well. Sometimes it pays to be uber aggressive and just do what you gotta do to get it done. Even though on the back end, you're gonna receive criticism because you've lost your flexibility and your fan base is gonna be upset because you aren't out there being aggressive on certain guys because you lost your flexibility because deal ABC didn't quite work out the way you anticipated. At times, it makes sense to make those trade-offs. Again, depends on the individual player, depends on the individual risk assessment. If I'm still sitting in this chair and you're still sitting in that chair a decade from now, we can look back and see who made the right decision on level of aggressiveness.
All right, one last question on this. Last one. And it's really not about him.
Mm-hmm.
For the White Sox fans who are skeptical about the last thing that
sure.
you guys need to do,
sure.
which is sign the big free agent,
yeah.
what would you say to them?
You know, it's from my standpoint, I grew up in this town. I've been pissed off at every sports team in this town at some point over the course of my life. I was mad at the Bears when they let Wilbur Marshall go to the Redskins.
I was too.
Hard not to be.
Yeah.
I was mad when the Bulls let Horace Grant get away to Orlando, and countless other instances along the way. In fact, I sat over there at the picnic table with Jerry Krause about a decade ago to talk through the Horace Grant decision when he was working as a scout.
They got Rodman.
100%. It worked. You got two more rings.
Yeah,
it worked. But at the time, however old I was at the time, it left a mark.
Yes.
And I had access to the general manager to get a little more fill on why that happened.
Yeah.
So I get it. I absolutely get it. And I absolutely also understand, because of that experience, that words aren't really going to solve that, aren't going to change it. Action is. All along this path, all along this rebuild path, there's been a handful of things that people have said the White Sox will never do. Starting with the White Sox would never rebuild. The fan base wouldn't tolerate it. Jerry Reinsdorf wouldn't do it. Jerry Reinsdorf's too old, wouldn't tolerate the losing. Obviously, we rebuilt. You've heard this before. The White Sox aren't going to pay a tax on international signee. We paid $25 million plus on Luis Robert because he fit in the process of the rebuild. And we said we would. We said all along we'd make a trade with all 29 other clubs if it made it better, even the Cubs, despite some national reporters saying it wouldn't happen. We did that. So all those narratives should have died off, because not just because of words I said in an interview like this, but because our actions backed it up. You've heard me say along we're going to be players at the top of the market. Okay. The actions in terms of converting didn't happen, so I understand the skepticism. And it's going to persist until we either do it or we wind up winning without having done that, and people are more interested in what time the parade is than whether that last narrative about the White Sox came tumbling down.
When you see Arenado, Trout, Bregman signing these deals, mm-hmm. not even hitting the market, does that in some way change how you might approach the, you know, going forward and what you might do in the off season?
Well, you need to obviously be aware of what's available in the market.
Yeah.
so that does affect potential targets. At the same time, part of what we wanted to do was build up such a critical mass of prospects that the bulk of the cream of the crop would arrive to help us win a championship in Chicago, and some portion of it would be used as trade assets to plug in holes. So there's more than one way to skin a cat, so to speak. And if the answers aren't necessarily there in the free agent market in terms of what we ultimately need on a championship club, they may well be there via trade. And we'll work to get it done that alternative way. We're not folding up our tent on premium talent.
We're gonna
not only continue to trot some out here over the course of the 2019 season in terms of some of our young guys who have already been in the big leagues and progressing, but as well as some of the young guys at the top of the system being added to it. And next year we'll be back out there trying to add to it from the outside if need be.
All right, so we had a very respected national baseball writer come on our podcast. I'm not going to say his name. If you want to know who I'm talking about, just go back into the off season. And he said that from his information that the White Sox were basically in on almost everybody this off season, free agent wise. And
yeah,
I think
wasn't so, right.
Okay. But I think that's part of why Sox fans had these expectations this off season. And it's not your fault.
Right. I can't control that.
You can't control that.
There was literally reports about us having being deep in negotiations with players, and I didn't know who the agent was for the player. So that's the level of accuracy of some of the things out there. But you know, we've had this conversation offline before where we can't put out every false rumor, because if you put out 8 out of 10, then the 2 that were actually are true are going to gain credence. And again, our job becomes so much more difficult when it's publicly debated what we are actually doing. So the drowning with all these false rumors, or at least the majority of them being inaccurate, we just have to wear it, because it's easier at least for us to maneuver within the market if it's not really known what exactly we're doing.
You would love if social media didn't exist, wouldn't you?
That's funny.
Be tough on
it's,
you.
It's funny because, look, I get it. I'm on Twitter myself. Unfortunately, it's how I become addicted to it in terms of how I get the vast majority of my news, baseball and otherwise. So I see the utility of it. You also see the dark side with the Twitter tough guys, you know, firing uninformed hot takes, which is a beautiful thing. But I get how important it is to your industry and what it's sort of, what journalism, sports journalism has sort of morphed into. It's not turning back. So we just have to sort of accept it. We've lost deals. We have absolutely lost deals, including this offseason, because of Twitter reports. Because something has become public, and the other club has heard from others who weren't involved, that then changes the dynamic in terms of what the ask is or the likelihood of the exchange. The part that I really have a problem with is just the collateral damage. False or accurate report when a player's name is out there, that's difficult. These are human beings. It might be fun and fantasy to make these trades and criticize this guy for doing whatever on social media behind the protection of your keyboard, but these are human beings, and we deal with sort of the personal side of it. And sometimes, because of some of these reports, you gotta, you know, reach out and try to smooth things over a little bit. But it's not changing. So we're the ones who are going to have to adapt.
I'm not going to ask you what trade got, or whatever it was, what deal got railroaded because of it, because I'm assuming you're not going to tell me.
You're correct.
Yeah. But how disappointing was that when you thought you had a deal?
It was to the point where we were essentially on deal point. We hadn't like exchanged medicals, which is again another hurdle that sometimes doesn't get cleared. And do keep in mind, more often than not, more deals die on the vine than actually happen. So that excitement and then it falling apart is something you just sort of get used to. But this one, I was pretty upset about this one.
Yeah,
this one upset me because it should not have gotten derailed. It shouldn't have gotten out there. And the process that followed after that was all a ripple effect from the public exposure. So it was pretty clear what had happened. And it's unfortunate. But again, we move on. We're used to deals not happening. We're used to having to be flexible. I probably haven't talked about the deal falling apart publicly since you know, the last time somebody asked me about Twitter this offseason, so it's not like it's something frequently on our mind, and just it's part of the gig in this day and age.
Just a few more questions. There are many stages to this rebuild. Do you believe the worst part is behind you?
I think the worst part is behind us from an on-field performance standpoint. I do think there's going to be challenges over the course of this year in terms of frustration or eagerness within, certainly within the front office, but more so probably within the fan base. If you look back at the history of these things, you go back and look at what people felt about the Kansas City Royals in, like, my years might be a little off, but like 2012, 2013, yeah. You see some of the things that were, you know, said about Jeff Luhnow and the process they underwent in Houston during their fourth losing season or, you know, third 100 loss season. Even Theo, you look at some of the comments that were made about the Cubs before the switch got flipped and they started going to run. There's a frustration that comes with the repetitive losing and a desire for immediate success at the big league level of every guy who comes out. No one, we all know what we signed up for. The fans embraced it early on. The fans have, for the most part, been fantastic in terms of getting where we're at, and even being, even when they're critical, it's critical for reasons in support of the rebuild. I do think that in year three of these processes, you do tend to see a little more frustration bubbling up, whether it's because player X got hurt or player Y isn't as good as he's supposed to be immediately on day one, or, you know, another player is, you know, stalling out at the minor league level, which is all part of this process. So I do think from the product you're going to see on a nightly basis when you tune into White Sox baseball, there's going to be more and more reasons to be excited about the future, which is going to help things. But I don't know if when you look at it overall, we're going to be able to avoid that same sort of creeping frustration or want for immediate results that have infiltrated every other successful rebuild over the last decade.
So you see, if I read you correctly, they're going to, on the field, you're expecting them to take another step forward, but it may not be what some might
It might
hope.
Not be quick enough. Yeah. It might not be, there's going to be somebody who's not going to quite meet expectations.
Really?
Afraid so.
Okay.
Now, hopefully we'll also talk about the guy who's far exceeding them to make people excited, but there's going to be somebody who doesn't immediately on day one, or in the, you know, his first full year in the big leagues, or even his second, isn't quite the stud player that everyone projected him to be. That's going to lead to some frustration, but that's part of this process.
You've had a lot of these guys be given a lot of rope, and rightfully so, because it's a rebuild, and you're giving them chances to succeed or fail at the major league level. Are the stakes a little higher now because of guys who are in the minor leagues getting closer, and then your window opening?
We're getting closer to where we want to be, and part of doing that is, you know, you got to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak. Like, there's going to be guys who, if they aren't performing, are going to get passed, and other guys are going to get the opportunity to show they belong as part of this core. I don't think there's going to be many players who, if they happen to get passed, are going to say, I didn't get the opportunity to show I belong. We've been good about that. But there are limits, especially when you have a wealth of talent coming behind them.
And finally, you've been here in this clubhouse. You've seen what's in there. Can you give White Sox fans an indication of something they may not realize about this team right here, right now?
This team, you know, despite perhaps dour feeling to the start of the camp outside of that clubhouse or within White Sox Nation because of the way the free agent market played out, that hasn't permeated that room for even a day. I think you heard Tim Anderson the day after Machado made his decision say something like, get on board or get out of the way. And that's the attitude that they have in there. That team believes in themselves. That team doesn't care what they lost last year. That team doesn't care about who's not in that room. They believe in the people who are in that room. And that, again, that's a cultural thing. That's something that starts with Ricky and his staff, and that's something that veterans like Alonso and Jay help reinforce. That's something that Abreu as a leader has helped set that tone, and Tim Anderson growing into a leader reinforces that tone. So the last guy who's going to tell a fan how to feel is me, having been through it myself on the other side. Everyone's entitled to their opinion, their emotion, their frustration, whatever, they own it. But in that clubhouse, there's nothing but excitement about where this team currently is and where we're going.
So there's Rick Hahn going in depth on many topics. And listen, losing out on Machado was a crushing defeat for the front office and for many of you White Sox fans. It sounds like Hahn has turned the page. And if you're still skeptical that they will ever sign a player of Machado's ilk, even though more of them seem to be locking up extensions before hitting free agency, it's going to be up to the front office to change those feelings. Rick was pretty upfront about that. And he did mention the alternative to free agency, and that is going out and acquiring some big names via trade. The Sox do have prospect capital, specifically in the outfield and in the pitching department. And at some point, I do see them going down this road to improve the major league team. When is that going to be? I would say the earliest would be before the trade deadline. This could be a very interesting trade deadline this year because there's not going to be any August moves like there were in the past. But I would say more so next offseason and the following year when you'll see those trades happen. But we'll have to wait and see. In the meantime, they've got Eloy Jimenez signed long term. He'll be with the White Sox on opening day. And we'll have the game for you on NBC Sports Chicago for his debut on Thursday at 3 p.m. We've got a full hour-long pregame show starting at 2 o'clock. White Sox baseball, White Sox regular season baseball is upon us. I cannot wait. And that is going to do it. My thanks to Rick Hahn for coming on the podcast, and my thanks to you for listening to the White Sox Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank. Your home for White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to the special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox. Hawk Harrelson, take it away.
Thanks, Art Chuck. And this edition of the White Sox Talk Podcast is over.